Subscriber's amazingly ultimate fundraising superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Hello. Good. Oh my God, I don't even know what time it is. Good afternoon. My name is Simon Scriver. You're all very welcome. I've rearranged my room because, well, my house, my apartment, because it was getting too messy in terms of the amount of live streams we're doing. And also, I'm doing Ring Fit Adventure, Nintendo Ring Fit Adventure, if anyone has that on Nintendo Switch. So I needed more space to run and do the Nintendo Switch stuff. You're all very welcome. This is a bit of fundraising chat, bit of nonprofit chat, whatever you want to call it. No one can remember the full title. I can't remember the full title. So I'm going to be with you for the next half hour, maybe more-ish. I'm supposed to be doing a lobster chat at 4:30. If any of the lobsters are watching, I'm probably going to be late. But we'll see how we go. So what are we going to do today? What are we going to talk about today? There's a few things I want to talk about today. If we can get through them all, let's see. And so you're all very welcome to comment wherever you're watching it. If you're watching this on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, you should be able to comment just there, and I'll keep an eye and read out interesting and controversial comments. And also, if you want to join the conversation, if you want to come on, if you can't get enough of video chat right now, then you can come on. You can go to fundraisingeverywhere.com/TV. fundraisingeverywhere.com/TV, and you can watch this. You can watch a bunch of other stuff as well. But there's a little button there. There's a red button there if you want to join the chat and come on. We're going to get a couple guests on today. So what do I want to talk about, and what do I want to hear your opinions on? If you want to get involved, if you're lonely, if you're isolated, if you have some strong opinions about what's going on, then give me a shout. First of all, or at some stage, we're going to be talking about whether it's wrong to be asking for donations right now. I've seen a lot of interesting thoughts on this. People saying that charities should not be asking. Other people saying some charities should be asking. And then we get into that hierarchy of which causes are more important than others. People saying only COVID-19 causes should be asking right now. And other people saying that there's only some COVID-19 affected causes that are worthy to be asking right now. So it's all very complicated. So I'm curious what you think. Should your organization be asking right now? Should some organizations not be asking right now? And then just in general, is there a ranking of importance of charities? What charity or what cause do you think is dumb? Someone who said to me, they were telling me about a game they play in their nonprofit. I'm not going to name them. I'm not going to tell you who it is. But they were saying that they do a thing where they go around the table and they say, name a cause or a charity which you think is dumb. Or not worth giving to, which is pretty harsh. But then you think of like homeopathic charities, and you realize that they're probably dumb. And me personally, this is controversial. I don't think I'd ever donate to a university. Is that controversial? Because I did not enjoy my time at university, and I don't want to give my money to any university. So do you have a cause that you think is stupid? Do you think animals are stupid? Do you think universities are stupid? Do you think the arts is stupid? Do you think hand cream is stupid? What is it that you would not donate to? I'm curious. Then I want to talk about fundraisers getting furloughed. And I have a guest who we're going to bring on very shortly, Nikki Wrench, not Nikki Bell, different Nikki, Nikki Wrench. She set up a Facebook group for essentially fundraisers who get furloughed. So I want to understand what furloughing is. I want to understand how to pronounce it. And then I want to understand what's happening with this group and essentially what are fundraisers going through who are being told that they can't work. You know, they can't work. Suddenly, some of them are losing income, a lot of income. Some of them are being told that they're not allowed to learn. They're not allowed to continue personal development while they're off work, which seems insane. So I'm going to ask Nikki Wrench in a second. I'm going to ask her to explain this to me so I understand it better. If we have time, we'll talk a little bit about Zoom fatigue and just video chat fatigue, because it is just unbearable, isn't it? Everyone wanting to do a video call constantly, like friends I haven't seen in like 10 years suddenly want to do a video call. What is going on? So let's talk about what your thoughts are. Come on to another video chat and have a little moan about Zoom. But what is the equilibrium for this? How are we going to manage this? Because this is out of control. Out of control. And then we'll just do a general COVID-19 chat. So before I bring on my guest, my first guest, Nikki Wrench, let me just see what people are saying. There's a few comments here already. Beth Ann Locke. Hello, Beth Ann. How are you? I bet Beth Ann is sickened because she can't travel around the world anymore with all the stuff going on. Hi, Simon. I think that charities should be engaged with their donors, and that includes asking, but being thoughtful to what you are asking for. 100%, Beth Ann. Yeah. I mean, I'm all for we can be asking. You can ask at the best times, you can ask at the worst times, but it's all about how you do it, and it's all about not being tone deaf. That's a great comment, Beth Ann. So if anyone has any other comments on Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever, just reply to wherever you're watching this stream, and I'll see it or come across to fundraisingeverywhere.com/TV. Okay, I'm going to bring in Nikki, if she's around at the moment. So please welcome my guest to the show. Here's Nikki Wrench. Hello, hi. Nikki.
Hi, you okay? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Perfect. Yeah, good quality. How are you?
What was that? Sorry.
How are you? You okay?
Oh, I'm good. I can't hear you, it seems. No, I'm good. Thank you. I can hear you now.
Okay. Well, I mumble at the best of times, so I'm going to try and speak really clearly. How are you surviving COVID-19? Who are you stuck in your house with? Who are you ready to kill?
I'm stuck in the house with my husband and my daughter, who's 15.
Okay.
Weirdly, it's my husband I want to kill and not my daughter. Yeah. We're getting on great. He's just decided that now's the time for him to, you know, do everything around the house that's always needed really? Doing. Yeah. Which I wouldn't mind, but he's like, come on, do it with me. I'm like, no. Yeah. Go
and is he any good, or is he like me and useless at that stuff? So he just makes it worse. Yeah.
I feel like Let's move on.
So Nikki, you're a fundraiser. You're a professional fundraiser.
Yes.
And what's happened to you and your position during all this?
So I found out, I think it was last Monday, that the roles of regional fundraising manager, which is what I do, our roles were going to be furloughed. So that there's seven of us across the UK. Within I work for the Make-A-Wish charity. So our roles have been furloughed with effect from Friday. So yesterday was officially my first furlough day.
Okay.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think as fundraisers, we're a bunch of doers. You never stop, do you? I always say that fundraising is not a job. It's just who you are, and you're a fundraiser 24/7. So to not be able to do that is really, really strange.
Yeah, it is a job that seeps into everything you do, isn't it? Just in conversation with people, you know, when you're walking up down the street and you see something and you're always thinking, okay, how could this work as a fundraiser, or how could it come into play? And now you're feeling like you can't do anything about any of those ideas.
I think I was chatting to a fantastic lady called Fiona on Friday, who actually got in touch with me through LinkedIn and asked if I'd like some coaching with her while I was on furlough.
Yeah.
And I was chatting to her and she was like, so how are you feeling? I was like, oh, you know, compared to everything else that's going on, I'm fine. And she's like, yeah, but how are you really feeling? I was like,
yeah,
I'm fine. And then gradually she broke me down and it was just like, what is my purpose if I'm not a fundraiser? Like, what do I do? This is who I am. And like you say, everyone that you talk to is a potential donor, supporter, volunteer, and all of a sudden that's gone.
Yeah.
I feel like I've lost a limb.
Oh, okay. Let's go back a second. So people who are maybe in a country, because you're in the UK, I'm in Ireland. People who maybe haven't seen this furlough thing yet, you know, because I imagine most of us had never heard of it until the COVID-19 starts to roll out. So what is it? From a legal point of view, what's happening and what does it mean for you?
Okay, so my understanding of it is that you can be furloughed if you potentially don't have a job within your organisation because of coronavirus. However, your job should still be there for you when all this is over and done with.
Okay.
So it's if your company or your charity needs to essentially would have had to make you redundant.
Mm-hmm.
so that they don't make you redundant, the government have come up with the furloughing scheme where they will cover 80% of your wages as long as that charity or company keeps you on the books.
Okay.
So essentially it's so that not everybody becomes unemployed and businesses are able to stay afloat. That's from my understanding. The difficult part of that, I think, from a charity point of view, and I'm hoping that they look into this closer as the days and weeks go on, is that charities rely completely, you know, on a small number of staff, but also heavily on volunteers. But part of the furloughing scheme is that you can't do anything for your charity or company, including volunteering anytime, because the government's essentially paying you because your employer has no work for you to do. So then for you to volunteer for them, it's like you're saying, well, pay this person because we're not, but they're going to work for us still anyway. So that's where a lot of us are lost, because I work for Make-A-Wish, or until furloughed, I work for Make-A-Wish.
Yeah.
But I also volunteer massively for Make-A-Wish as well. So my whole, everything that I do, all of a sudden I can't do any of it. And I would imagine there's an awful lot of people in the same boat.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's weird, because not to pick on Make-A-Wish or anything, but say just any organization out there who's going through something like this, I mean, could you not argue that the fundraisers, they could be working, you know, that they could be still working online, they could still be making phone calls. You know, a lot of your job is face-to-face stuff, but it's not all face-to-face stuff, and businesses and other charities are adapting to this. So do you feel like there's stuff you could be doing? And like, would you have happily carried on as is and adapted to everything that's going on, and that's your job just changes?
Yeah, so we, as a team, we're sort of looking at the things that we desperately want to do all of the time, but we never get the time to do.
Yeah.
So we all take on a lead role. The regional fundraising managers all have a lead role. So mine was DonorFlex. So I was heavily involved in a project where we were getting DonorFlex to be working in the right way for our organization. We have a member of the team whose lead role is marketing, a member of the team whose lead role might be local runs. So we were all trying to focus on perhaps things like that, as opposed to the everyday third party events that happen that we're so used to, you know, taking up a lot of our time.
Yeah.
However, because of the simple lack of income coming in, I think that they knew that it was going to get to the point where even by doing all of those things, we weren't going to bring enough money in to even cover our costs, let alone pay for any wishes that we might be able to still do.
Yeah.
So what they've done is our team's got 7 regional fundraising managers and 2 senior fundraising managers. So the 2 seniors have stepped up and they've stayed on and taken on any sort of anything that we could hand over. So they're looking after all of that for us, bless them. And the rest of us have been furloughed. So there's a couple of other people. So we've got the guys that would normally work on events, they're all coming together to see what they can do, perhaps virtual challenges and things like that.
Yeah.
But I just don't think we wouldn't have been able to raise enough money during this time to warrant keeping us on, and every penny we have needs to be spent on wishes and on our wish children.
Yeah, I can get it, because it's like, it's the unknown versus a guarantee. Here's what the state's going to pay, and we can, you know, we know what we can do. Whereas, you know, people claim to be kind of fundraising experts throughout this. No one really knows what response rates are going to be. No one really knows what people are going to do with their money. So I can see how it's a safer option.
And I think as well, you know, as much as, you know, I'll shout from the rooftops that a wish is something that every poorly child should have, and that's coming from, you know, I had a wish when I was younger, that's why I do what I do now. And but on the context of things, when we look at everything that's going on in the world at the minute, would you be going out there and saying to people, give us your charity money to grant wishes when actually there's an urgent need for that fundraising in other places at the moment. So, you know, we could be going out there and doing an urgent appeal right now, but actually it wouldn't be appropriate because there's a much more urgent need out there for, you know, research, for food banks. Yeah.
Well, I'll come back to you on that. I'm going to come back to you on that and challenge you on that one, because I'm curious to know what you think is more important or less important. But in terms of your own personal circumstances now, when does this go until? Do you know when you'll be back to it, or what's the long term?
I think we are under the impression it's probably going to be for at least 8 weeks. I think that's the sort of the first guideline. However, I believe that you have to be furloughed for a minimum of 3 weeks. So if we had some dramatic change and you know, everything went back to normal in 3 weeks, we could go back. Okay. I'm also aware that for the amount of money that we will lose by the end of this, what we've predicted, our organisation's going to be a very different organisation at this point. So Make-A-Wish, although it's a big brand, it's actually quite a small charity. How we then go on to work going forward is going to be very different to what we were doing 2 months ago. Majority of our wishes were travel wishes. We don't know when that will ever pick back up again.
These are kids who want to go to like Lapland, Disney, Universal, things like that.
Absolutely, anywhere across Europe or over to Disneyland, Florida. We don't know if we can grant wishes like that again. So I think internally now they'll be having those conversations about what our organization will look like after this. So potentially there's scope for, you know, organizational change and restructure there as well.
Of course. I mean, even the biggest charities, they don't have a big pot of money sitting there, you know, usually reserves are maybe 2 months, 3 months. For the most prepared charities. So
yeah, because you're so strictly guided with regards to reserves, nobody should sit there and have loads of money pulled away. So this won't just be, you know, small charities that this will hit. It will hit, you know, I've seen hospices really struggling. But even your big charities are going to feel this, because they might have had bigger reserves than the smaller charities, but they probably got much bigger outgoings as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've heard rumors about a couple huge charities who, you know, it doesn't look good for them. But I mean, we'll see. Okay, so the reason I suppose I associate you with this, obviously you're going through it, a lot of people are going through it, but one of the things that you've done is you've set up a Facebook group for people like this, for people who are going through what you're going through.
Yeah, I think it was just the first thing that I did on the day that I found out that I was being furloughed. It might have been the day after. I was chatting to somebody on fundraising chat, and
do you ever just like chill out? Do you ever like read or something?
I'm trying. I'm really trying. I got it through 2 pages of a book yesterday, but I couldn't do it. I'm such a loser. I've signed up to do an online Excel course so that I can like really master pivot tables for when I'm back. My boss will be thrilled. But yeah, so I was on fundraising chat and I was just, I was talking to people and everyone was feeling the same. You know, what do I do if I don't do this, if I don't do my job? And I jokingly said to somebody, oh, we should set up a group. And then I thought, actually, we should set up a group, because I've been really lucky. I've had some brilliant colleagues and really exceptional mentors in the past. And I've still got that group of connections now. So if I need anything, I've got a group of people that I can go to. We've got our WhatsApp groups and I can say, I can ask them anything and I know that they're there, and they call it our safe space. And actually, a lot of people don't have that. And as well as not having that, we're also in a really weird time of the world at the minute where we can't even go for a coffee with someone. We can't go around and get a cuddle off our mom. You know, it's one of those things. So these groups are more needed now than ever. So I thought, actually, it might be all right if a few people want to join and chat to me, then at least there's somebody there that's in the same boat. And then it turned out lots of us are being furloughed. There's quite a few people joining now.
Yeah, so if people want to find it, what's it actually called on Facebook?
It's called the Furloughed Fundraiser Chat.
Furloughed Fundraiser Chat. And is this true that you guys were talking about actually proper job swap? That, you know, you can't volunteer for your own organization, but there's nothing to stop you volunteering for a different organization. So you're almost what, like pairing
it already. Yeah. We've opened it up. So originally it was a case of, if you've been furloughed, come and join this chat.
Yeah.
And then we started saying, you know, well, actually, if you've lost your team because they've been furloughed, actually, you might be feeling on your own as well. And you might need some help. So we've got people that have come on that have perhaps been left behind as the only fundraisers. And they're now saying, I could really do with some support with this, that, or the other. Yeah. And then people within the group that have got those skills have volunteered to help that charity.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I'm really chuffed with it. I'm really chuffed that it's giving people something to do. It's giving people that purpose. And
yeah.
I'd say for me, that's the big thing. Like, what am I if I'm not a fundraiser? Whereas we can carry on being fundraisers now, but, you know, making sure that we're doing the right things for our own charities as well.
And I think it's amazing because it's just other people who are going through what someone's going through, you know? And I think that's what we really need right now is, you know, there's lots of training and lots of information out there and stuff, but what people seem to be really looking for is just like someone who understands what they're going through. Because we all feel very isolated and we all feel very alone. So for you to do that group where someone, you know, like you said, someone feels like they've lost a big part of them, they feel lost, they don't know what to do next, then suddenly here's a group with hundreds of people in who are going through the same thing and have some suggestions. Yeah. I love it. That's great.
And I think, like, say, when I was chatting to Fiona on Friday, the coach, she said to me, you know, it's really okay to feel fed up with this because I'm one of those really irritating people that is always, you know, up here. And when I'm asked about, how you feeling? I'm fine. I'm fine. Yeah. She was like, it's okay not to be. And by the end of it, I was like, actually, Fiona, I'm really not okay with this. You know, I'm a bloody good fundraiser.
Yeah.
But you know, and actually that's a great thing for the group where people can say, I'm a bit fed up about this.
Yeah.
You know, why me, I suppose, in a way. There's a lot of people saying, why was my role chosen over others? And it's nice to have other people in the group to say, like, I worked with some of these people and I can go back and say, this absolutely isn't a personal thing because you're an amazing fundraiser.
Yeah. Yeah, so, some people just need a bit of reassurance. They can take it almost personally, I think, is the feeling there.
And that's the worst bit. I don't want, like, I don't want anyone to come out of this and go back feeling like they've not done a good job because we're all brilliant at what we do. And
yeah,
it's an absolute pleasure for me to work with so many fundraisers. I do some work. I'm on the committee for the IOF West Midlands. And just the people that you get to talk to, they're just wonderful. They're just wonderful. And it's like, we need those people to go back feeling their best when all this is over. So
I do love fundraisers because they're a weird mix between positive and really like, we can do this, we can change it. But they're also quite cynical and, you know, like they'll have a little moan and stuff. And I love that. Like, it's very real. It's very human. We're open.
Yeah. I think you have to be.
You have to be, don't you? Yeah, especially when your job is like 90% no's or 90% rejection. You have to have.
Yeah, got to just put that smile on, haven't you?
Yeah.
Just be like, that's fine.
I'm gonna ask you about these causes that you think are not worthy or are worthy. I'm gonna
quote
you out of context. But there's a few people on here. Angela has said, "Well done, Nikki." Aaron Clary has said, "Can you add me, Nikki?" Aaron, don't be so lazy. Go find it on yourself on Facebook. So if you go on Facebook and add yourself, Aaron is there. Because Aaron says he's going through the same thing. He's a fundraising manager in the UK and he's also been furloughed. So it looks like he's going to join your group. Sorry to hear that. Aaron. Yeah, sorry to hear that, Aaron. But yeah, if you search Facebook for fundraising, furloughed fundraisers chat.
That's it.
And you'll find it. And Nikki Wrench is obviously one of the admins. Mark Hughes has said, "Well done, Nikki. Very candid and honest of you to discuss your work situation. Hopefully you can get back to making dreams come true very soon." I love Make-A-Wish. I did a bit of work with Make-A-Wish in Ireland, and they're such a sweet little bunch. But you're right. It's like such a tiny, there's like a tiny infrastructure because it's so volunteer-based and because it's like the way it works. It's such a small organization for the impact it has.
Yeah. I mean, Make-A-Wish UK and Make-A-Wish Ireland are actually two separate charities.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
when I put a post on LinkedIn last week about being furloughed, somebody from Make-A-Wish Ireland got in touch with me just to say how sorry they were to hear that. Uh-huh. And you know, and I just thought that's for me the beauty of fundraising and charity, that everyone's yeah. just, they want to help each other, don't they? So
yeah, that's lovely. Laura's there, she says hello. And Beth Ann Locke is talking about, I believe her partner is a major donor, by the way, I'm reading that. Anyway, so in terms of, I mean, this is kind of stepping aside from the furlough bit a little bit, but I'm curious about your opinion.
You're putting me on the spot now.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot. Like, but I'm genuinely curious about this, because even in the best of times, there's like, I think we all kind of rank charities in our heads okay. or how important a cause is. And one of the things you said there was about, like, obviously some of the Make-A-Wish programs should be impacted, so we shift money to this COVID-19 mm. thing, which is a bit more pressing. Is it more pressing now? Like, do people's wishes, do the kids' wishes still not take a precedent? You know, because I just think, like, even before COVID-19, we had people who were, you know, starving to death, people who couldn't access clean water and stuff like that, and we give money to that, but we still also give money to wishes, to universities, to political parties. So at what point is a place that you give money to, at what point is it stupid and not worthwhile, and at what point is it relevant? Like, what cause would you Nikki never donate to?
Oh God, I'm with you on the education side of things.
Yeah, really.
And I hate to say it, because I'm you know, really close to people that have worked and, you know, being fundraisers for universities, and but for me, it's all about the children is top for me.
Yeah.
It just stems. I'm not a career fundraiser. I suppose I'm not. I don't do this because I love being a fundraiser. I'm a fundraiser because I fell in love with a particular cause.
Okay.
So for me, I had my own illness when I was younger. I had a wish from Make-A-Wish, and then
I became
a volunteer for Make-A-Wish further down the line.
Wow.
And through that, I then met some amazing families who were using our local hospice, and I then volunteered for them. I then worked there for 5 years, and then after that, Make-A-Wish had a job come up in the Midlands, and I went for that, and now I work for Make-A-Wish. So for me, it's always been about the cause, as opposed to wanting to do the job. I fell in love with what I do through that. So it's all about the children. Hospice care, having worked in a hospice for 5 years, one of the most amazing places I've ever had the privilege to be in. So yeah, that they would top my list.
Wow.
You've
really shut me up. You've really shut down the time. So am I allowed to ask you a couple of things about your wish?
Like,
do you mind? Like, feel free to just hang up or whatever.
No, it's fine.
But how old were you when you got your wish?
So I was 15 when I was diagnosed with leukemia.
Okay.
And then when I finished my treatment the following year, I was referred for a wish because I couldn't do anything during the time that I was ill. I was an inpatient. So at the end of my treatment, one of my nurses referred me for a wish.
Wow. What type of leukemia did you have? Do you mind me asking?
I had acute myeloid leukemia, AML. Mm.
Same as my father.
Oh, okay. Mm. So it's more common in adults than children.
Okay.
With being on the threshold, with being 15, they thought I was going to get the childhood one, but when the test came back, I had the adult leukemia, they called it. So.
And were you like, great, I'm an adult, thanks.
Yeah. It said to me, let's just really hope you've got ALL. We'll keep our fingers crossed for ALL. And then they came back and went, oh, we're really sorry you've got AML. I was like, oh, great, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Really, really, really reassured me.
Can I ask what your wish was?
Yes, so my wish was to have a holiday with my family. So we had grown up as a family. We'd got a touring caravan, and we spent our weekends and our holidays going to Wales and Scotland, and it was just our thing. We went in our caravan, and we loved that time together. And then being an inpatient in hospital, and if you've been there with your own dad, you'll know that no matter how much you try, you do become a little bit disjointed. My mum and dad were trying so hard to make sure I was okay that, without even realizing they were doing it, they were leaving my sister out. She was 18 months older than me, and so at the end of it, me and my sister weren't very close anymore, and I just wanted just that one bit of normality again. So I was like, I just want, even if just one more time, if we could all just go on holiday somewhere. And I said, my dad doesn't like planes, so anywhere in the UK. And I was really excited. I thought they're going to send us to Centre Parcs. Like, this is my moment. And they came back and offered to send us on a cruise.
Oh, dream.
But it's amazing. So the wish visitors, they questioned us, and I was like, no, it's got to be in the UK. And they were like, okay, so when you're old enough to go away without your dad, where would you go? And I was like, oh, I'd go to Ibiza with my friends, which I've never done.
Oh, yes.
And they took all of that back, and they went and had a look into how they could get me to Ibiza without going on a plane. And they sent us on a cruise that stopped off at Ibiza. So, yeah, it was amazing.
That is amazing, isn't it? That's so lovely.
This is why, so, you know, how could I then not want to help this amazing organization? You know, we walked onto that boat, we walked onto that boat as four people, and we left as a family. So I fully understand the importance of a wish. I know that it's not just a nice thing to have. It's not just and I'm not working, Boris. You know, I'm not working.
He can't hear you. He's got some trouble.
He's indisposed. But yeah, it is one of the most important things. And for us, that was when we got our closure, and that's when everything changed for us.
Yeah.
And every year since then, we've had a holiday together as a family, and it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
And we've had a holiday every single year together, whether it be just the four of us, now with kids, husbands, dogs. It's just become that thing that's ours.
That's lovely. Oh, I'm getting a bit teary-eyed, sorry.
Don't. It's a nice thing.
I know. I love Make-A-Wish at the best of time or at the worst of times. Like, I just think it's such a straightforward charity. Everyone loves it, don't they? But just to hear one of the fundraisers, because I already know of you, but I don't know your background. So to hear that you were a Make-A-Wish child and then you come through as a fundraiser, like, it's incredible.
I couldn't anything else. when I say about, you know, should we be asking people to fundraise for us right now?
Yeah.
That said, in a, you know, if we were still able to grant the amount of wishes that we were before, in my opinion, yes, absolutely, we should still be asking people for that money. But the reason I think not is because our wish load has had to reduce dramatically, because I think it was 85% of our wishes were travel.
Yeah, so you just simply couldn't even deliver. Yeah.
Should we be saying to people, please continue to fundraise for us, even though we can't grant those wishes, when there are charities out there right now that desperately need that urgent fundraising?
Yeah,
so,
I think that's a very human, lovely stance on it, because I think, you know, there is a mindset usually of a lot of people that charities are competing for the same amount of money. And you know, so that's why we don't see as much collaboration as we should. But this seems to a certain extent push that aside, you know, and I think we're seeing more collaboration than ever, because I guess partly we have to.
Yeah.
But just people seem a bit more human and a bit more generous at the moment and wanting to work together. So it's nice. All right. Thank you, Nikki. That was lovely.
That's okay. Thanks for having me.
We'll chat again soon.
Yes, definitely.
Really, I've so many more questions about my career. But so yeah, so
I'll chat
so again,
all day.
Nikki Wrench. If you want to find Nikki Wrench, I know you're on LinkedIn. You're on Twitter as well, aren't you? You're more of a LinkedIn person, are you?
More of a LinkedIn, yeah.
You're more of a LinkedIn.
I can't fathom Twitter. I don't get the hashtags and the arts.
It's a bit much sometimes. Yeah. All right. So Nikki Wrench, find her on LinkedIn or Twitter. And then the Facebook group obviously is Furloughed Fundraisers Chat. And the good news is Aaron Clary has joined and been accepted. So he's in there now. thank you very much, Nikki. I hope everything goes all right with you and your family, and mind yourself. And if obviously if myself or Nikki Bell can do anything for you, then give us a shout.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Bye.
That's Nikki Wrench. We're not technically, I don't think, allowed to promote her charity and donation because she's technically not working, but I think I'm allowed to. So if anyone wants to go make a donation to Make-A-Wish, then do go make a donation to Make-A-Wish. I can't believe I had a Make-A-Wish child on the show. That's amazing, isn't it? Oh, she's lovely. So if anyone, if Aaron or anyone else who's furloughed has some strong opinions that they want to share, then please do feel free to come on. Go to fundraisingeverywhere.com/TV. You can watch the live broadcast there. We show a bunch of stuff all the time on fundraisingeverywhere.com/TV. So please do feel free to come and check that out. But you'll see a button on that page as well to join the live chat. If you click on that button, then you'll come on and we can have a chat about it. It would be good. Laura, our good friend Laura, who if you watch the show on a regular basis, you'll know she's a regular feature of it. She's asking, can furloughed fundraisers fundraise for things that are personally important to them, like hand cream for nurses? Yes. So furloughed fundraisers, my impression of it, and someone can disagree with me, is that furloughed fundraisers, they just can simply not do anything for their own organization. So they can't fundraise for it. And technically they can't do personal development, and learning that's going to benefit the organization. So it's a bit nuts. So, but by the sounds of it, you can fundraise for anything else you want. You can volunteer for any other organization. You just can't volunteer for your own organization. That seems to be, the rules around it. Laura's talking about hand cream again. She's obsessed with hand cream. Laura is running a fundraiser for, hand cream, which I have donated to, and you're welcome to donate to. And I'm sure Laura Crowdacre, if she comes on or if you find her on LinkedIn, she'll send you the link. Basically, she is raising money for to provide hand cream to nurses and people in the medical industry who are not getting access to that because we're just not getting access to stuff we need. And I saw another one recently about nurses and stuff whose ears are getting all fucked up because they're wearing masks so much. And so this, I think a little kid has invented some new kind of mask which doesn't hurt as much. So I like that. So it's the same thing. They're wearing gloves all the time. Their hands are getting fucked up. And so they need hand cream. And this is actually part of where this conversation started about the ranking of charities, because there was someone replied to Laura's thing. I mean, to be honest, it was kind of funny. I donated to it, you know, because I love Laura. I think she's great. I think she's amazing. I donate to it, even if I thought her cause was stupid. I think this cause isn't stupid, but still, I donate to it. But someone in the sector said, well, I'm not going to donate to that, Laura, because, I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not going to donate to that because I think the government should be providing it. And I just thought it was so funny because, you know, as someone who works in the sector, and this person who said this is representative of the sector, you know, they're an umbrella body. It was just a weird statement because surely you could fucking say that about pretty much everything in our sector, that the government should be doing it. Like none of these causes, or very few of these causes, should exist if this was actually being, you know, if society was being run properly and if our government was being run properly. So I don't know. So I'm going to bring Laura on. We'll try and get her. We'll see if she can tell that story a little bit better than me. But also, it's just nice to check in with Laura, isn't it? So let's see how she goes. Here she is. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Simon.
How are you?
Hi, Simon. Thanks for your donation. Hi, Laura.
You look amazing. You look fantastic. You're all like dolled up and stuff, are you? Or is this just normal?
I'm joining a load of Americans on a conference call shortly. Okay. So I decided to put some fake tan on.
Did you really put fake tan on?
It's a bit much, I wanted to feel like I'd been on holiday because I was meant to be in Marbella this week, but I'm not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, anyway, truth.
Well, you look great. The background looks amazing. Is that a real background or is that one of those Zoom backgrounds?
No, this is my office.
Ah, it's really nice. Office. Lots of plants. I know you're big into your plants.
I've got a large tub of hand cream down here.
Okay. Does mine arrive? When does the one I
need to put another order in, but I was stopped at the time I bought 20. So I'm going to do the rest this week. So yeah, thanks for the share there. I decided.
Yeah, that's right. And I was happy to donate. Can't remember how much I donated. I think it was £500, £600, something like that. But so did I summarize it right? I mean, it's essentially they're not getting these basic supplies, and their hands are all chafed to fuck because of all the gloves and stuff.
Yeah. So we were clapping at our windows last Thursday, and my next door neighbour is a surgeon. Looking after pregnant women, and after with the clapping I noticed she wasn't clapping But she was cheering, and I was like, "Are you okay?" And she's like, "Yeah, my hands are really sore because we've been washing them so much." And they were saying that they couldn't get hand cream in any of the supermarkets, and all, like, it was all sold out.
Yeah.
And then I was talking to a couple of other people about it, and I thought, like, I woke up one day and I was like, maybe I should just launch a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Sanitizer on right now, making me think about it. And so essentially I launched it, and I think we're at like £563 right now, because I had an offline.
Yeah, it's good. Donation. It's good, isn't
it? Somebody was quite negative about it and was like, yeah, I should be providing that.
I'm gonna play God's advocate on this one. You know, I think I'm on the same page with you, but you know, this is a talk show of sorts, so I'm going to challenge you on this. He was a little negative, but at the same time, he was, you know, he did just kind of say, "I'm not going to donate to that. It's not for me," which we're entitled to, aren't we? Aren't we entitled to just be like, "No, I don't want to donate to that"?
For me, it's not right. For me, if you haven't got anything nice to say, don't say it. Because ultimately, if you're knocking somebody, although they did come back and be like, "I'm not knocking your effort," like, of course it would be amazing in an ideal world if the government provided everything people need, because most of us could be like, "My job's done," right? And I always say, actually, whenever I'm in, like, if I'm in a job interview or whatever, like, they say, "What is your goal?" And I'm like, to close the organization down. Like, I'd love to get to the point where I'm able to be like, we've done our job. You know, let's close our doors because everybody's got what they need. But that's not really the way the real world works. And so I think that perhaps that person that tweeted me had just got out of bed on the wrong side.
The reason it really struck me, and I suppose why I'm talking about it, is because it sparked that conversation again, which I always find interesting, with which causes are worthwhile or not, you know, and obviously that's a personal preference, that we have causes that resonate with us that don't. And it's not, you know, there's lots of causes that I'll never donate to because I'm just like, whatever. And I don't go around kind of, you know, I don't publicly say I'm not going to donate to them, except maybe my university. You know, I'll publicly say I'll never donate to my university. So things like that. But it was weird because he's from an organization that represents all charities, you know, anyone who wants to be a member. And then to say publicly that this particular cause, you know, it's not. What if they were a member of this organization that he's representing? Is that not kind of like, "Oh, why am I a member if you don't think I'm worthwhile?"
Yeah. I mean, one day when I'm doing an open plenary at that conference of that person's organization, I'm like, "Remember when you said?" I mean, essentially, my passion for this is three ways, really. I've got a next door neighbor who's literally out the house 18 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, performing surgery on people that are really sick and all the rest of it, and looking after lots of poorly pregnant women. And I've got a cousin who's on BBC Breakfast News talking about, I put it on my LinkedIn page yesterday if anyone's interested in watching her. Her name's Dr. Amy Jones. She's one of the leading intensive care doctors in the UK. She has moved out of her family home for the foreseeable because she's got vulnerable people at home, and she's an intensive care doctor. And her doctors and nurses that are working with her have basic needs such as hand cream that just make their day just that tiny bit better if they're having to link a dying patient with a family on FaceTime and hold patients' hands. You know, she talked about it really candidly. People have been, you know, 175,000 people watched the Facebook upload of that yesterday and shared it. My inbox was going crazy. Now, for me, if you can make somebody's day just that tiny bit better, who's on the front line, we're all sat at home. Like, I'm sat at home, you know, working hard for our clients that we're fundraising for. But, you know, this is my kind of ethos. If you can't really say anything really positive when somebody's trying to do something nice, then that says more about them than it does about you.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. It's difficult times and people are, you know, constantly getting out of the wrong side of bed.
People, which is why I got fake tan on, just so I look a little bit more.
Yeah. How's your hands? How's the good, quality of your hands?
I mean, I was gifted for my birthday
Jo Malone
hand cream, but I'm all good. But I mean, I can't really complain about anything. I mean, I'm at home, I've got food, I've got a job that I love. We're helping loads and loads of charity clients that their campaigns are flying. Yeah. My son is in isolation for 12 weeks, but he's got an Xbox. I mean,
That's nice.
Can't complain about that.
I mean, it could be a lot worse, couldn't it? I mean, your neighbor who's in surgery and who's in, you know, on the front line all that time. Fuck, that's tough, man.
Well, I mean, when my cousin did the interview on BBC Breakfast News yesterday, you know, she was saying, you know, only 50% of my patients are surviving. I've got patients that are critically ill in their 20s, 30s and 40s. My nurses are crying after every shift because they're holding the hands of people that are dying. And if you don't stay at home, this will end up being you. She was really candid. Like, she's an intensive care doctor. She's head of clinical services for the Welsh Air Ambulance. And she's an army reservist doctor who's been on like three tours in Afghanistan. And she's a mom to like a 3-year-old. And
this is your neighbor.
This is my cousin.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of the people in the Kradache, or as you like to say, the Crydacha family.
Not pronounced Kradache, is it?
Yeah.
That sounds like a fake name. I mean, I wonder if your neighbour just wasn't clapping because the clapping's for them.
She was crying.
Overwhelmed because people.
Oh, no, she was like a little bit like, but she was cheering and like shouting for everyone and then asked everybody in our street, does anybody need any grocery shopping doing tomorrow? I can get up at 5 and go do it for you. Like, she's just amazing. But going back to GoFundMe and fundraising, like if I was furloughed right now, I was saying this to one of my neighbors out the window the other day, like I literally would be losing my marbles a bit. Because, you know, I love my job and I love working on campaigns that create social good. And that was why I put the thing in the chat box, because I was like, can they fundraise for things that they're still passionate about and still feel like, you know, they're fundraising for something?
Yeah, and it sounds like that's kind of one of the, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily planned things that's come out of this Facebook group from Nikki Wrench, is people finding an outlet for their fundraising, you know, so they want to fundraise and here's an organization that they can fundraise, or here's a cause that they're passionate for. It's a very strange situation where, you know, I don't know if you heard Nikki speaking there, but she's a Make-A-Wish child who grows up. Yeah, she's amazing. And she volunteers and then she becomes, so it's not like she's a professional fundraiser. She's just locked into Make-A-Wish. So then to be told that you can't fundraise for that, like that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah, and I think there's a real sense of feeling, not hopeless, but like you just don't know how to help. Like I've certainly felt like that. You know, how can I help people? What can I do? If you can't go out, you know, how do you make a difference? One of the things that I do love, though, that I've been telling clients, obviously it's kind of just like me rambling away on the phone to them, but I'm saying like, how many Facebook followers have you got? And they're like, this is like a side note to calls about the work that we do for them. And they're like, oh, we've got like 12,000 people. And I'm like, that's on average like 1,000 people a month that are having a birthday. Why don't you reach out to them and be like, will you donate your birthday to us?
Yeah.
And see what they say. So loads of people have been talking to me about this in like my pro bono help. If anyone that's watching wants free help, people will know. You can message me on LinkedIn and I will do a call with you for free. So we've launched like 19, I've launched 19 campaigns with people I've done pro bono calls.
Wow.
And they're going really well.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
I mean, the vibe from everyone, and I'm curious to hear anyone who has experience of fundraising or sending out appeals during this, everything I've seen so far is that the response rates are amazing. Oh, you know, like, I mean, you had said before that they were high. Mark Phillips, I saw on Twitter saying that they've sent one out, and he's like, if you're not sending out an appeal, you need to send one out now because the results are amazing. Everyone's saying it, so people are being very giving at the moment, but we have that fear of asking, I think, because it feels like an imposition right now.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, without sounding like a plug for the organisation I work for, we do telephone fundraising, and we normally see like 20% conversion on like lottery upgrade, for example. Like at the moment we're seeing like 43% to 48% conversion, like on some of the campaigns. Wow. And like they're all performing so much higher, regular giving us cold leads, like, oh my gosh, like it's so amazing. And what we're finding is people, when we're ringing them, I'm listening to calls throughout the day, and they're saying, oh, thank you so much for phoning me. I've wanted to know how to make a difference, but I just haven't known. Like, and I've been sat here trying to work out like how I can help, because people are struggling. And then when you hear them say that, and you hear them, you know, so grateful and thanking you for phoning them, and they're like, how much more can I donate a month? And we're like, you can do whatever you want. Like, it's completely
No, you can't do it anymore.
Yeah, it's so nice. And going back to the Twitter conversation we had about like if people should be fundraising for things the government should be providing. When I was getting comments like that, people were inboxing me on Twitter saying, are you okay? Like, you know, that don't take it personally that people are negative at times. Like, as a fundraiser, it can be really difficult to not take things personally. And like, I had quite a lot of NHS staff that like aren't fundraisers. We see the tweets and they messaged me saying, it's our most requested item right now.
Yeah.
Our nurses will be so happy. Like, you know, can we send you pictures so that you can thank the donors from our nurses? And I was like, this is one of the best things about being a fundraiser.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. Like, fair play to you. I think it's great. It's not for everyone. You know, other people want to put their money elsewhere, but for some people, this is, it just strikes the right chord at the right time, and they have money to spare, and that's people fucking like fundraising. That's fundraising, like, man. People like me, there's like millions of causes out there, and we don't all think of them in exactly the same way. You know, but almost all of them, it doesn't make them less worthy. Unless you're a university or a homeopath charity, then you're fucking stupid. but there you go. Oh, you're a big homeopath, aren't you?
No.
Okay.
I'm vegan for 12 years, but like,
same thing. So, Laura, what is the name of your organization? Because you're always very careful not to mention it, but what is it?
So I work for an organization called Unity 4, and we do telephone fundraising. We do lead gen. Obviously fully GDPR compliant. And we do Facebook lead gen in like 5 different markets. So like all over the place.
I need to talk to you. Not on air, about a telephone virtual conference that we have in the pipeline. So I want to talk to you.
A telephone virtual conference.
Yeah, I'm whispering it. You're not supposed to shout it. So, we'll talk about it another time. But if people, you're still giving out free advice, you're still a wealth of information, and so people can find you on LinkedIn, Laura Cridace. And they, if they do a search for you, they can just ping your message and add you.
Yeah, if they want to ping me a message, I'm now back on Twitter. For a bit while we're in lockdown, I thought I'd bring that back.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was off for like 2 years.
Yeah.
On Twitter, I'm at Always Colour.
UK spelling.
Yes, UK spelling. But mainly people have been messaging me through Facebook because of the COVID charity preparation support group. It's got a very long name.
That's your group?
No, it's not my group. Howard Lake set it up, and it's got about, not on Facebook, are you? It's got about 12,000 people. Nikki Bell's on there.
I'm not Nicky Bell.
I know, but she's part of the group.
Okay. That's cool. No, I'll check it out because we do have fundraising everywhere on Facebook. So I'll check it out. Okay. So lovely to see you, Laura. I'm gonna start to wrap it up and I'm going to say goodbye.
I know, I've got to jump on my call with my American.
Yeah. So. Do find Laura. She's really useful, really interesting. Laura, we'll talk again about stuff. And hopefully
now I'm your number one fan, right, apparently.
I know. Hashtag blessed. But we hope we'll get a chance to chat to you again in an upcoming broadcast. Are you a fan of The Drunk Chef? We're going to cut across the Drunk Chef scene. You love it?
Don't even. When I was cooking last night, I was going to live stream it and tag Millennial John. But no, he's not Millennial, is he? He's like whatever he is now.
Who,
and he
was John saying, Rett?
Yeah, he was saying, what was he
he's
saying?
He's like a fucking boomer or something. What's
yeah, but
the
he was
oldest
claiming
name?
To be a millennial, wasn't he? Yeah, I was cooking last night and the night before, and yeah. I was going to live stream it on Facebook.
I think he's looking for guest cooks. You should talk to
well,
him.
Well, I could do a lot of vegan stuff. So.
Yeah, and you could do a vegan show on Fundraising Everywhere TV.
Well, I might have to get like organized for that. Yeah. So we can talk about it.
Let's chat about it. Okay, I'm gonna get rid of you. Nice to see you, Laura. Lovely to see you. We'll chat to you again. Thank you. Bye. Thanks very much. That's Laura. Very good. So she, I mean, that was interesting. That's what got me thinking about what causes are more important than others. I'm curious to hear your view, if you have any views about what's a dumb cause or what cause you would never donate to. But we're going to wrap up in a minute anyway, because we're going to cut across to Fundraising Everywhere TV. If you have never seen Fundraising Everywhere TV, it's on every week on social and are at fundraisingeverywhere.com/TV. We have a bunch of nonprofit type people around the world who contribute regular pieces. It's not 100% business, but it's not 100% personal. And so you can justify watching it in any scenario, have it on the background. So coming up tonight, we have a brand new episode of The Drunk Chef, John Lepp, where he's cooking something old fashioned. I can't remember what. We have a cameo from Howard Lake, who's going to be tickling the ivories and playing a song for us. We also have the debut tonight of Gold's Gone Wild. So Gold's Gone Wild have their own show on Fundraising Everywhere TV now, which I'm very, very excited about. This is good. So it's four amazing fundraising type. Actually, I don't think they're all fundraisers. But four amazing ladies, women helping women succeed. The name of the show is Talk is Cheap. And so they'll be talking about some of the hot topics of today, whatever those might be. I'm assuming COVID-19, but we'll see. Sometimes we have the unsteady hand, Mo Onstad. He is not appearing tonight. And then coming soon, we have Charity Island Dis with Wayne Murray. So we have a bunch of programming coming up. Fundraising Everywhere TV, have it on the background, interact, chat, watch, whatever you want to do, ignore it. We've got some cool stuff coming up on that. So we're going to cut across the Drunk Chef in a moment. Oh, do you want to see this video clip of my son from a few years ago? Here we go. Yeah, that's Harrison. Right here. So let's have a look at what we have coming up. Before we go across the Drunk Chef, let me have a look at what we have coming up in on Fundraising Everywhere. So we've got a bunch of events coming on. Obviously, we do regular training at fundraisingeverywhere.com all the time. But obviously, with all this stuff going on, we're trying to ramp it up. We're trying to do more social events and whatnot, more things like that. So you can see coming up, we've got virtual networking drinks. Let me make this a bit bigger. We've got virtual networking drinks coming up. That is this week on April 8th. Is that tomorrow? I think that's tomorrow. So we've got, you can just pop in, you can have tea, you can have alcohol, whatever you want. We're just going to mill around and have some video chats. All are welcome. It's a networking thing if you want to keep your networking going on. We've got virtual karaoke coming up. The date is to be confirmed. That is my fault and I apologize for that. I need to be in the right frame of mind to do karaoke. We've got I Wish I Thought of That coming up on April 21st. Tickets are still available. For that is a paid event. It's not a free event. It's a paid event, but it's very reasonably priced. The Charity Film Awards is going to be streaming everywhere. That's on April 21st as well, after I Wish I Thought of That. So we'll be doing the Charity Film Awards through Fundraising Everywhere, which is exciting. We've got a members clinic coming up on the 23rd. And then we've got Alice Ferris is doing a training session on April 30th. So already the kind of month is pretty full, but actually we're adding a couple things beyond that. We've just locked in, I believe, this Thursday, a face-to-face panel discussion, which all are welcome to. And I think that's going to be streaming everywhere, but I'll let you know if you keep an eye out Fundraising Everywhere on our social media, then we'll announce that soon. But yeah, please do come to our events, learn if you want it. If you can't be asked to learn, then don't bother to learn. I'm not pressuring anyone to do fucking anything at the moment. If you want to just chill out and do, if you want to just have it on in the background, then it's nice to have a bit of a connection and stuff like that. That's it. Okay. Thank you all very much for joining me. We will be back again soon. Well, we're here every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Irish time. I'm going to be doing this. Actually, I might have to rearrange that because I'm clashing with the Lobster Chat and they're going to kill me. So Tuesday afternoon, evening, we do this every week. We might do some bonus streams of this coming up. But that's all for me for now. We'll chat again soon. We've got more to chat about this. We'll get some more interesting guests on. I really enjoyed Nikki Wrench today. That was really interesting. Fascinating. Get her back on again. And Laura always is very interesting. And so that's it. So now we're going to cut across to the Drunk Chef. Well, am I going to do a little outro thing? No. Oh, do you know what? I'll do my little credits thing, will I? I love doing my credits. And then we'll come back to the Drunk Chef. Okay. So that's it. Lovely to see you all. Thanks for joining me. Take care of yourself. I hope you're doing well.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more.
What's up, fundraisers? This is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell, and we are the founders of the virtual fundraising conference, Fundraising Everywhere.
And we have just launched Fundraising Everywhere membership. So if you want full access to the virtual conference every November, if you want full access to the Fundraising Everywhere festival in May, if you want bonus downloads, if you want access to extra sessions, if you want access to VIP events, if you want access to all of my masterclasses online, if you want Pizza for Losers discount, if you want all this stuff and loads more, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which we can't even cram into this tiny podcast ad. But if you want part of that, then go to fundraisingeverywhere.com, become a member, be part of the family, pay a small monthly membership fee to us, and you'll get all of this stuff.
Will that do?